Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Labino. And as always, I'm joined by my colleague at frontstretch.com, Mike Neff. And this week, Stuart Haas Racing's Eric Almirola will call into the show to discuss the new aero package, qualifying, and other topics. But first, make sure to subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, as 5-star ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Vegas with Neff. All right, Neff, we saw the new rules package implemented on Sunday. Overall, I thought it was kind of an interesting race to Las Vegas. A lot of passing in stages 2 and 3. Stage 1, in my opinion, wasn't the best. What says you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a new race with the new rules package. I think we've got a couple teams that have figured it out pretty well and some others that are struggling with it. But all in all, I thought it was more of the same of what we've had, to be honest with you. I mean, the leaders have an advantage being in clean air, which the leaders should have some advantage. But I thought we saw some cars make some runs and able to make some passes, although at the very end, and you heard Kyle complain about it after the race, that he kind of stalled out once he got up there to those final two. And I don't know if that was necessarily the package or if that was just that he had used his stuff up by the time he got to there. But whatever the case, I thought it was a decent race. I thought there was passing throughout the field. I don't know that the folks at the at Fox showed it all to us as well as they could have. But all in all, I mean, it was probably I give the race about a B. I mean, it wasn't a barn burner, but at the end, the racing was really good and it had a good finish.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish I was at this race pretty badly because the hype around it was so real. It was one of the most anticipated races, honestly, you could say, in like the last 5 to 10 years because of the new rules package and the way that the sport's going with it. And stage one, when Harvick got out to like a 5-second lead, I'm like, oh boy, this looks like the same. And then you had guys coming from the back to the front. You had Kyle Busch get a speeding penalty on pit road, come back, like you said, to finish third. So there was passing, and you're right, maybe Fox didn't do the best to show all of it. It had the most passes in a Las Vegas race history, so that's a good thing. I gotta be honest, I was surprised how clean it was. There was no incidents outside of the stage breaks, and that's the first time since 2002 at Talladega.
Yeah, unfortunately, I worry that may be a common theme with this package, because of the fact that you've got so much more downforce on the cars, and the speeds, yes, the speeds are up a little in the corners, but in general, you've just got more pressure on the cars holding in place. So I feel like unless you have some people really pushing it and really wearing the tires completely out, you're not really going to have issues of guys losing control. And, I mean, that's one of the things that us old schoolers always argue about we want to see is cars that are really hard to drive and that even the best can lose control of them sometimes. And I don't know with this new package, it is, you know, an 8-inch rear spoiler on the thing. It's going to have them stuck to the ground pretty good. So it's going to be a challenge, I think, to get a whole bunch of cautions in a race this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I was coming into the season thinking it was going to be more chaos because of, you know, they're going to be bunched together closer than ever, where restarts are going to be a premium throughout the year, as we saw on Sunday. Wild restarts, 3-4 wide for the first couple laps, and then the tires start to wear maybe a little bit, even though Las Vegas the surface isn't that old. But there was 47 green flag passes for the lead throughout the racetrack, so not at the finish line, but all throughout the racetrack. That's the most ever. That's kind of skewed because a lot of that was during green flag pit stops. So 19 were actually, you know, counted for at the line. But then there were 3,345 total, like, green flag passes throughout the field. So, I mean, that's a lot of passing. But very interesting. But Ford looks to be dominant yet again this year. It didn't seem like the change of the Mustang, you know, hurt them that much. Unlike last year with Chevrolet and the Camaro. Second win for Team Penske, Neff. They look really good to start the year.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of weight in the loop data passing statistics,
right?
Because their definition of a pass just means that the transponder crossed the line before the other one. I look at a pass as a car has to be completely beyond the other car,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't happen near as often. Although I still feel like and I didn't go back and really count it up, but I felt like we had more lead lap passes for the lead at the line than we have in a long time, even on track. So that was a good thing. The Mustang, I mean, I felt kind of coming into this year that it wouldn't be as big of a deal because of the fact that they had had the Mustang in the Xfinity series for a year or two to work with it. So I think they had some numbers and then an idea of how that was going to react before it got to Cup, where Camaro kind of was all thrown in at one time. So that was a little bigger challenge for the Chevy teams. As far as Penske, yeah, this is this may be a perfect storm for them. You've got a couple guys there in Keselowski and Logano that are really good plate racers. And this new package is basically glorified plate racing. So I think that between them and Kyle Busch, you may be seeing those three cars at the front quite a bit this year. We're also seeing that there's a huge premium on pit road penalties. we've had a couple races now where guys got penalized and they couldn't make it all the way back to the front. And it's a penalty. It's called a penalty for a reason. But it has definitely cost some guys, and I think teams are going to have to be a little more on point this year and a little less willy-nilly with their penalties on pit lane.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Kyle Larson for the second straight week had a pit road penalty and could only rebound to 12th again for the second straight week, finished 12th. Austin Dillon had a really fast car, looked like throughout the whole weekend, got up to second early in the race, and then he managed to finish 20th. So, yeah, you're right. It's going to pit road penalties look like they're going to be more crucial than ever this year. But Kyle got up to third. So I guess, I don't know, I guess it's something to keep an eye on as the season progresses. But yeah, man, Team Penske is on a roll. I wrote about it on my personal blog this weekend. Logano Keselowski, obviously past champions of the sport. They're going to run well. And this really goes back to the start, I guess you could say, Darlington. They've been on a roll. Keselowski won three straight races then to 2018. Starting with Darlington, then Indy, then Vegas. Logano had a couple wins in the playoffs. Blaney got a win in the playoffs. And now they got 2 or 3 this year. So they're running well. Ryan Blaney is having some bad luck, some misfortune. Currently an average finish of 25th. So I guess he's got to turn it around, but he's got to be confident that the speed's there.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it that Penske's got things headed in the right direction and is doing the right things with this package. And we'll see if we get some adjustments to this package as the season rolls along. But for now, yeah, they are flying, and it's going to be up to everybody else not named Kyle Busch to catch up to him. Because Harvick was there coming off the – well, I shouldn't say coming off the truck, because when they came off the truck, they were bad, and they made a bunch of changes to it and got it really good, which was impressive in and of itself. But it's – interesting this year without the in-car adjuster. I think, and I think that has done what it was supposed to do. Taking that away, is we have seen more teams have it early and lose it late, or not have it early and gain it late, to where they've made that adjustment on that track bar and got it to where the car's happy for their driver, or have taken it away from the driver and not gotten it back. And that's what that was intended to do, was to take away a little bit of that flexibility during the race and make guys have to make decisions. Do they want to be good at the beginning of the run or the end of the run? And so I've been pleased with that outcome. I don't know that Harvick is, because for the second time in 2 weeks now, he's had the dominant car early and kind of lost the handle on a car late in the race.
Yeah, you're right about that. And obviously, he won these two races last year, and he won at Phoenix this upcoming weekend last year. So, I don't know. It's definitely early in the year, obviously, so it's kind of hard to gauge anything. But I would say Penske, you got to say they're probably the best team right now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no question that Penske's the best team right now. Kyle Busch is there. Truex is kind of getting there, but he's still got a little bit to go. But I think that's still a little the growing pains of being with a new team. I've been a little surprised that Denny Hamlin has seemed to be a little out to lunch since the 500. I mean, I know you get a little bit of a hangover from winning the 500, but they haven't seemed to be as crisp as I expected them to be coming off of that 500 win. But again, and I know we beat it like a dead horse for the last couple of weeks, but Hendrick, good golly, they look bad again this weekend.
Yeah. At the end of stage two, there's a, I think Elliott was ninth, and then Johnson passed Byron on the final lap to get a stage point. But then in the final stage, Johnson fell to 19th, a lap down, the lowest finishing of the Hendrick drivers. I mean, I don't know, man. It looked just like last week to a degree. I mean, they had a little better finishes with Elliott getting his first top 10 of the year, Bowman getting 11th. But yeah, it's something to keep an eye on definitely going forward, because I don't even know if they're a top five team right now.
No, I don't think they are. I don't even think they're close to being the best Chevy team. No. I think Chip Ganassi Racing is definitely looking better than Hendrick is, and it's curious. I'm kind of happy to see that actually that Kurt Busch and Matt McCall seem to be kind of hitting on some cylinders here. We'll see how it continues to develop through the season, but that pairing, at least at this point in the season, looks like that was a really good decision by Ganassi and by Kurt to get over there and hook up with McCall.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week, but also I was impressed this week because Busch didn't have the sheer speed he might have had at Atlanta, but they played him and McCall played a little bit of pit strategy, got out front, and he was on old tires, and man, he was wheeling that car and because it was at the beginning of stage three, and he was staying ahead of like Logano, Keselowski, Harvick, all the fast cars, led 23 laps. That's the most laps the number one car has led since 2014, Neff, with McMurray in it at Martinsville. So, and it was a really cool scheme he had, too. It was a 1999 throwback that, you know, and he paid for that out of his own pocket. Davey Siegel, our colleague of Front Stretch, talked to someone at Star Nursery. That's a cool deal. So, good run for Kurt Busch, second straight top five after kind of a dismal Daytona 500. But yeah, that's a good pairing, him and McCall. It's definitely something to look forward to going the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think the cool thing about that is you've got Kurt, who just gives you 110% every lap, and he's one of those guys that you can take gambles with, and you know that he's going to give you everything he can. And as you said, he's on old tires in front of guys on new tires and able to hang it out and just, you know, grit the teeth and gut it out and give you everything he can long enough to make your strategy call pay out. And it ended up working out for them and getting them a top five this weekend that I think they even admitted after the race they were nowhere close to a top five car. But sometimes it's strategy that pays out. We'll see how it goes this weekend. I think this weekend is going to be a different animal again. We see there are the iteration this weekend without the tapered spacer. So I think we may be going back to more of last year's same old, which could be ugly for everybody not driving a number four.
Yeah, that's true. And especially because they're at Phoenix and Harvick's got, it seems like there's three things that are certain, like death taxes and Kevin Harvick winning at Phoenix. So yeah, I mean, but Kurt Busch, I mean, if you think back to the fall Phoenix race, he had a position to win. He really had to win and then got wrecked late in the going by Hamlin. He had to win to make it to Homestead, but man, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a victory here very soon because they're hitting on all cylinders right now, which is something I don't know. I guess I'm not too surprised about because I thought he'd get a win. He's good for a win every year, it seems like. But with the way the one team's ran in the past few years, I mean, it's a little surprising, but not too much. Now, if I do want to transition, though, I got to be honest. I was impressed a lot with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. this week and his composure. He said to Fox before the race that he felt really confident, and he showed that. He got stage points in both stages, then finished sixth. So, I mean, is this kind of a turning point for Roush, at least for Stenhouse?
We'll see. I've gotten a kick out of the fact that Ricky has definitely been aggressive,
yeah,
is a good word, very, for how the season has played out so far. And there's been a lot of talk about him, but I think it was rightly pointed out during the race by multiple people that, you know, people made, outside of Truex bitching about him when he was a lap down, but most people are like, if you race me hard, I'll race you hard. And similar to Logano's the same way. He'll race you as hard as can be, and he expects to be raced back that, yep, same way. He's not asking you to give him anything. And I think that's the way Stenhouse is. He's a dirt track racer, and you get what you can anytime you can get it. And it's so far this year, he's had a car that has let him do that a little more. The past 5 or 6 years, they haven't had vehicles that would really contend anywhere. And especially on a mile and a half, which they've been really bad at for a while, it was good to see them running well. And it's been fun to watch Ricky really being Ricky and ruffling some feathers and getting after some guys. But at the same time, unlike the plate races the last couple of years, it doesn't seem reckless. I think in the plate races, he's been kind of reckless, and that's what a lot of people have been upset with him about. In these races, he's been aggressive, but he hasn't been reckless. He hasn't been putting people in situations where they're wrecking cars or they're dangerously out of control because of his actions. He's just being aggressive. And I think, in all honesty, that's what all of us want to see more often at these races, is guys going for it from lap one instead of late waiting until restarts and only getting after it on restarts.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of good points there. Definitely the comparison to Logano and how, you know, they expect to be raced hard. In Senna's, I mean, I personally enjoy his, like, I don't give a shit attitude. Because he, obviously, like you said, he was reckless on the plate races last year at Daytona, caused 3 crashes, honestly. But this past weekend, raced really hard with Eric Jones, but that was good racing. They traded paint a couple times, which might be a little dangerous on a mile and a half track at those speeds. Yes, they're down from last year, but not drastically. So, that was interesting to watch. Then at the end of the race, him and Eric Almirola, Ford, you know, teammates to a degree, they were swapping paint back and forth, finished 6th and 7th. But Senna's got a good finish. He led 5 laps. It was the first time he scored stage points in both stages since Daytona last July, where he won the stages. So that's something to watch going forward for sure.
Yeah, and the funny thing, too, and we see this all the time in this sport, is you get 2 guys, for whatever reason, that maybe rub each other in the wrong way or whatever, they just constantly seem to find each other. And I feel like we'll see how it plays out over the next couple months. But I get a feeling the 17 and the 20 will just be near each other a whole bunch this year. I just feel like those 2 guys are going to be around each other, and we'll probably see it turn into an incident or two at Martinsville or something like that. But I look forward to it. I think those 2 are going to have a great rivalry this season, just because it feels like they're kind of held together by magnets so far the first 3 races.
Yeah, it was cool to see when Jones got around him when they were swapping paint. He gave him the deuces sign out the window. So that was kind of cool. Neff, I want to hit on Richard Childress Racing a little bit, because they looked really good all weekend long, as I alluded to earlier with Austin Dillon. Daniel Hemric was really fast all weekend too, and they looked at the single car speed. They didn't need a draft really in qualifying, which I want to talk about qualifying. Let's hit on Richard Childress Racing first, because I mean, they didn't get the finishes at all. Obviously, Dillon had that pit road miscue, and Hemric just kind of faded back from the beginning, finished 23rd. So, I mean, is it kind of worrisome to have the 1 lap speed and not the whole run? Because that's what they struggled with all weekend, even through practice.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if it's the Hendrick syndrome at Daytona, where they trim the cars out to where they're really fast by themselves, and then you get into the pack and they're too difficult to handle. Dillon, it seemed like, had it still going on during the race until they had their penalty. But I worried about Hemric because, yeah, as you said, they dropped the green and he disappeared. And I don't think I saw them show his car all weekend during the race. He was just gone. It comes to that trade-off. And that's one of those decisions that crew chiefs have to make and drivers have to buy into, is – do you want to trim it out to where it's faster by itself, but when you get around other cars, it's more of a handful? And you get guys like Kurt Busch that like that feeling and enjoy it. And I don't know if Hemric enjoyed that. I felt like Hemric's car was a handful and he was just kind of along for the ride. There may have been more to it. We never heard anything, but I'm with you. He disappeared at the beginning of the race and was gone. But again, it's cool to see the three car have some speed on a mile and a half, because that's been their bread and butter since he started at RCR. And the last couple of years, they haven't had that. And I think now that you got he and Danny Stockman back together, I think those two are going to do some things, and it's just a matter of really getting their hands wrapped around this new package.
Yeah, I was interested in the Danny Stockman and Austin Dillon, you know, them joining forces again, because obviously they had a lot of success in the lower series, winning championships in both trucks and Xfinity. So I don't know. I guess it's kind of surprising to see them run so well in qualifying and then just kind of fade in the race. I mean, Dillon got up to second early in the race, but then during the first green flag run, he started to fade. He went to like sixth or seventh before pit stops, then had the penalty, which was an odd penalty for having an additional crew member, you know, too many crew members over the wall, for one getting the tire, grabbing the tire, and just putting his hand on the ground. So, I mean, NASCAR deems that to be, too many men over the wall because a body part is hitting the ground.
Well, the thing about that, though, is that's been going on for a little while. And so NASCAR came out and told the teams this week, hey, if a pit crew member's hand hits the ground, it's the same as a foot. And they were all told that up front. It was a black and white call, and NASCAR was going to make it. And you saw two different teams get called on it this weekend, because Larson's team got called on it as well. Mm-hmm. And I was with Jeff Gordon on it. I think it's a little bit nitpicky, but at the same time, what the hell are they putting their hands on the ground for? The Dillon one I kind of understood, because the guy was reaching for that second tire, but there was another crew member there catching a tire that he didn't need to get it. The Larson one made no sense. The guy is there, the car's pulling into the box, he's not reaching for anything. What the heck's his hand on the pit for? So I guess, you know, the fact that you were warned up front, the teams have got no complaint. And yeah, it may be nitpicky, but when you're told up front that it's going to get called, you have no complaint.
Yeah, good point. And definitely something to watch going forward. Now that, you know, they know that you said going into last week, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so it'll be something to watch going forward. I mean, it's just a mental mistake, which all penalties are, but that's just a stupid one. I mean, honestly. So I guess we'll have to see if that continues going forward. I don't think that it will, but maybe I'm wrong. Now, I told you I wanted to talk about qualifying enough, because that was intriguing. The drivers hated it. There was a lot of drafting. It looked like a race to almost. The first car was at a detriment because they were leading the pack. I don't know what to say about it, because drivers seem to hate it. And I don't think that's how we should gauge the fastest car, because I don't think the fastest car won the pole.
It is what it is. I mean, we're in glorified restrictor plate racing, and in all honesty, I thought that was what the race was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, and 'cause we saw it in practice
too, yeah.
That there was a lot of that, and the race came around and it didn't happen. And I found that kind of interesting. But I've always been a fan of single car qualifying. I know it can be tedious and boring, especially at places like Daytona and Talladega, but it avoids a situation like we had down there at Vegas. I don't know. I mean, I've maintained for years that we should go to heat races, and I've been surprised that they haven't done that yet. Who knows? If this happens for a few more races, next year we may see heat races come around. So it didn't really make that much of a difference to me. I thought it was just the necessary evil of the way the cars are and the way they've got qualifying set up. I was kind of indifferent to it.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of contradict myself. I mean, I said I didn't like it. I do like group qualifying, but I don't think I will with this package, because we're going to see it every week pretty much. And that's not how you should set the pole winner, because the fastest car isn't going to get the pole every week. It's going to be who gets the draft, who gets the suck up to the car in front of it. As we saw with Harvick, obviously Harvick had a fast car, probably would have got top five regardless in the qualifying order. But I don't know. It's interesting. This whole weekend was interesting. We'll talk about Kyle Busch here in a minute, getting two more wins, which we're getting close to that special podcast that we'll probably do. But, man, I don't know. I'm confused on what to say because this we're going to see this every weekend. And the drivers hate it. Ryan Blaney says he used to like Fridays, so he's pretty blunt about it. Alex Bowman, the whole Alex Bowman Chase Elliott thing was kind of weird too. I mean, they didn't cross the finish line to start their final lap, but their lap still counted, and then they took NASCAR took them away. So Alex Bowman called it bullshit. I don't know, Neff. I'm confused on what to say.
I mean, the Bowman Elliott thing is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's black and white.
Yeah. And the fact that we're in an engineering-dominated sport where these guys have everything at their fingertips and can tell them how long everything should take, the fact that they didn't get them off pit lane in time to get back around and start their lap is on Gustafson and Mendering, or not Mendering, Ives. They've got to get those guys rolling to where there's a 2 or 3 second cushion to get them to the line. You don't need to be cutting it that close, and it ended up biting them. So that's on your crew chief, or else it's on the driver not getting through the gears fast enough. But either way, the call there, that's on the team. Again, I don't know if we go to Euro-style qualifying where you only put 4 cars on the track, but even then, whoever's at the tail end of the line is going to be the one that gets the advantage. So unless you get something orchestrated where you put all 4 cars out there and you let each car lead a lap and each car tail a lap, and even then it's not going to work out because by the time you drop back to get to the back for your lap, you're not going to be back up to speed in time. So it's, I don't know, it's a crapshoot. I don't think we're that far away from pill draws for putting the lineup together either, which, in all honesty, I wouldn't mind that. I think it'd be kind of fun to have your fastest car start 15th and 23rd and having to come through the field. I think it'd add a little more excitement.
Yeah, that definitely would. That's something else we'll have to watch going forward. Obviously, the Truck Series used to have group qualifying, and then, I mean, we based the Cup Series. A lot of people are basing the Cup Series this year off of truck racing, and they went away with group qualifying and truck racing. So, I mean, a few weeks ago, NASCAR said that they're, you know, group qualifying is going to be a thing. It's going to continue in the Cup Series, but with the drivers and, you know, outpouring saying that they don't like it, it seemed like nobody liked it, honestly. So even like Kyle Busch, who qualified 3rd, was pretty vocal about it. Other drivers just said, you know, like Chase Elliott said, it's what the fans want. So something we'll have to continue.
Yeah, I don't know if the fans wanted it. I heard a lot of people mention about it, but yeah, it's, as everything in this sport goes, we do it for a while. If people like it, we stick with it. If we don't like it, then we do something different. We'll let this go for a couple months and see how it works out, and then we may change it or we may keep it.
Got it. Now, any final thoughts on the Cup race? Because I feel like we should talk a little bit about Kyle Busch kind of dominating the Xfinity and Truck weekend.
I thought it was a decent race. I know there were a lot of people griping about it online, which happens all the time, but I thought it was a decent race. Again, I think the broadcast partner needs to do a better job of showing you the battles back in the field a little bit more. But in the end, like you said, Penske is a dominant team right now, and it's going to be up to everybody outside of the 18 to get faster and catch up to them. And I think that Harvick and Busch and maybe Larson all need to work on their pit road miscues, because it seems like those penalties are even a little bigger this year than they have been in the past.
And it was really weird. I want to hit on this quick. That Fox, I've noticed it during one cycle, but it might have been 2 cycle of green flag pit stops where they didn't have the pit reporters like talk. They just had Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon, Darrell Walter discuss what was going on. And that was really weird. Something we haven't seen. I can't remember in a long time.
Well, we saw that in Victory Lane.
Yeah, true.
That was the weird thing, too. I don't know, and I kind of meant to go back and watch it again on DVR, and I didn't, to see who Logano's pit reporter was. Because generally, it's whoever the pit reporter is for the winner gets them in Victory Lane, and they didn't do that. And I'm wondering if the pit reporter was ill or something happened that they couldn't get to Victory Lane, and so that's why they did it that way. Or maybe they're just trying something different.
You know, I think that's what it is.
We keep trying different things, so maybe this is something different. I don't know that I liked it. I kind of liked that personal interaction with the pit reporter. But in the end, you're going to get the same canned answers no matter who's asking the questions.
Yeah, I think they're just trying something different because I believe they did it with Keselowski at Atlanta. At Daytona, I don't remember because I was out, you know, we were out getting interviews and stuff when being there. But I think they did the same thing at Atlanta. So it might just be something that Fox is trying. But I feel like that the victory or the finish line interview gives a lot of brings a lot of perspective into you know what the driver's feeling like, because that's immediately after they cross the finish line for the most part. So yeah, I guess that's something else we'll have to watch going forward. But now this weekend we'll have to see if Kyle Busch can get win number 198, because he's running the Xfinity and Cup Series obviously again at Phoenix. Dominated the weekend in Xfinity and Trucks at Vegas at his home track. Led up 98 laps in the Xfinity race coming back from a pit road miscue with a loose wheel. That was a wild race to begin with. Really entertaining, but no surprise that Busch ended up in victory lane.
I was impressed with the fact that they won that Xfinity race because of the loose wheel deal.
Yeah.
And it was fun to hear Kyle's voice in the car, because I mean I've heard him mad plenty of times, because we all have, but to have his voice go up like 3 octaves mad was something new and different. And I don't blame him. And they talked about it on a broadcast. That's part of the pre-race checklist is torque wheels, and you make sure that every lug nut on your wheels is torqued to 75 pounds. Before you roll a thing out of the garage. And the bottom line is somebody missed that. There's no other explanation for that. The thing shouldn't back off if they're torqued at the right weight. But he kept his head down and got around there, and it took him a while to get there. And the part I enjoyed at the end of that race was Christopher Bell getting by him.
Yeah.
And then
hitting the wall.
It was like that flipped the switch. And I don't know if that, because they even talked about the fact that Kyle actually went back to the bottom because the top seemed to be faster, but his car wasn't working there. And you had Bell with whatever damage he got from bouncing off the wall. Between the two of them, that slowed them down enough to get Reddick into the mix, but Reddick wasn't able to take advantage of it. So yeah. It was definitely entertaining. The truck race, Kyle just ran away with it. And I got into some internet discussions with people about that. I still, and it's pure speculation on my part, I don't know anything about it, but I still feel like at the end of his career, Kyle is going to jump in a truck to win a truck championship so that he can say he has all three. And I would not be surprised to see him win 15 races in a season.
Yeah, we kind of hit on that last week.
Yeah.
If he gets a full year, watch out.
Yeah, it'd be insane how many races he can. He can legit win all of them, which I know is crazy, and that the odds of that are astronomical. But it would not be hard for him to win a significant majority of races if he ran a whole season.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the Xfinity race, or comment on what you said. Really, really exciting race, I thought, at the end, especially. You had... You know, it was between three guys, because the fourth place guy at the time, I think it was Brandon Jones, he was over 20 seconds back. So the top three were within about a second of each other for a lot, you know, a big portion of the end of the race with Reddick, Bell, and Busch. And at times, you know, like you said, Bell got around him. Reddick looked really good. Reddick's bringing a lot to that number two car. I got to be honest. Kind of surprised with how good he's running. I know he won the championship last year. But he wasn't the best car last year with Junior Motorsports, and I think he would even tell you that. But, you know, capped it off with a championship, so more power to him. But he, you know, he's bringing that experience. He's a really good race car driver. He kind of reminds me of Stenhouse in a way. Really good in the Xfinity Series, and just kind of, you know, goes ball to the wall, doesn't really care what happens. So he and Bell, yeah, they put on a show with Busch. And then obviously there was a lot of, you know, this race was extended 13 laps. Because of two overtime crashes. So, interesting race. And then with the truck series, yeah, Kyle Busch, I mean, it was kind of the Kyle Busch show. Brett Moffitt was fast, but you really couldn't compete with him. He got held up in lap traffic. So, Yeah, I mean, we're going to Phoenix this week, and Kyle Busch is going to be the favorite for the Xfinity race. So he might get 198 this weekend, Neff.
Could be. And then he runs the Cup race.
Yep.
we could be a 199. I thought we were going to get to 198 this weekend because, I mean, he looked strong in that Cup race early, but it just kind of fell apart on him. But yeah, we're gonna be having that argument soon, and well, not argument, discussion. And I'm trying to pull some strings to see if we can maybe get somebody really special on the podcast, but I haven't had any success yet. But we're gonna keep working at it. But we had a couple guys lined up, so when we do have the special podcast for Kyle's 200th National Series win, it's gonna be a good time. But he's on a roll, but you saw it, they talked about it on broadcast as well, and you saw it after the race on Sunday. He hates losing more than he loves winning. God, he was mad after that Cup race, and I don't blame him. But the thing that was good was he took credit for it, that it was his own fault, that he was trying, you know, they put a new brake package on, and he was trying to get all he could, and he got too much. And it was his own fault for doing it, and we'll see if he gets a little bit more conservative on pit lane. I find that hard to believe, but he might, just because penalties seem to be such a premium this year.
Yep, and he won the Cup race at Phoenix in the fall, so yeah, he could be at 190, what would it be, 9 now? So
99,
yeah, by the end of the weekend, which would be incredible, because then you go to Auto Club and he could, you know, top it off. He's running both races there too, so he could be at 200 the next week and a half. Which is crazy to think about. And yes, we will have a special podcast, I would imagine, about that. It's interesting, though, because if you talk to Kyle, he's saying that, you know, Petty's accomplishment is, you know, stands out more than his, he thinks.
I've argued this all the time, that there are two different accomplishments. I think Kyle's is more impressive just from the quality of competition that he has run against throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that the Joe Gibbs equipment in Xfinity has been really superior to just about everybody who's not driving for Penske for the last 3 or 4 years. But that comes and goes in this sport, and they deserve some credit for having their cars at that level. But I was arguing with people this weekend about it in the trucks. They're like, his trucks are so much better that nobody else has got a shot. I'm like, well, then why aren't Gilliland and Burton finishing second and third? You know, if they're that superior of equipment, then a trained chimpanzee should be able to get in there and run that good in it. It's more than just the equipment. And every driver will tell you that. When Kyle goes out there and does things, they look at it and they're like, how do you do that? It's because he's that good. And so that, but it's different. They're two different things. In the one stat I was looking at this weekend is number of starts to get to 200. And I don't think they're going to be that different, from Richards to Kyle's. It was, I want to say, 963 starts for Richard to get to 200 wins. And the one that people always argue is, let's see him do them all in Cup, and then he can do it. I'm like, he'd have to race for 27 and a half years in Cup and win at the pace that he does to get to 200. I honestly say, if you see him get over 100 Cup wins, we then can get into serious arguments about best of all time. Because that, in the modern era, when you only run 36 races in a season and the playing field is as balanced and equitable as it is, I think that's a legitimate comparison. Right now, he's a good Cup racer. He's probably one of the best drivers in the sport, but he's still got to win another 50 races before we really start getting into the rarefied era of best ever stock car driver. And I don't know if we will. The thing that I look at right now is he's 33, 34 years old. He's in his prime right now.
Right.
He won 8 races last year. If he rips off a stretch here for 5 or 6 years of winning 8 to 10 races a year, then we're at a whole other level, brother.
Yeah.
Then you're gonna be looking at 100, and he's 40, and he could win 10 or 12 more races from 40 to 45 or 47, and then you're solidly second all time in Cup wins, and you're at 100 Xfinity wins, and you're at 70 truck wins, and then he goes back to trucks and decides to win another 30 there, so he gets 100 in all 3 series. Yeah, let's talk. Okay, we can have that discussion then. But for now, it's going to be a fun discussion. I am totally willing to admit that they are two different animals. We're comparing apples and oranges, but I think the fun's going to be discussing which one is more impressive, because I think Kyle's is more impressive because of the quality of competition that he faces on a weekly basis, where you have 15, 20 vehicles finishing on a lead lap every race as opposed to 1 or 2.
Right, so that's kind of a sneak peek, a tease of the special podcast that we'll do for the Busch when he gets to 200, but I'm with you on most of them. I don't think he'll get to 100 Cup wins, honestly, but, you know, let's look at his stats quickly. He's won 51 Cup races and 501 starts, so 1 out of every 10, pretty much. Xfinity, 93 out of 346. Best Xfinity racer ever. I don't think there's any dispute in that.
Yeah, there's no question.
And then in trucks, 53 out of 147, so more than 1 out of every 3. He's got the most truck wins.
And when he passed Hornaday for most wins, he did it in half the starts.
Right. Yeah, so you could argue that he's the best truck driver ever, too. I don't really think it's an argument. So just hasn't, you know, ran a full year. So he doesn't have the championship. But, that's a sneak peek. Obviously one of the best drivers ever. So, like you said, if he gets to 100 wins in all 3 series, that would be absolutely insane. I don't see it happening. But moving right along, Neff, because I don't want to dive into that too much, because we'll save it for a couple weeks. We're going to Phoenix this week. We had an interesting race there in the fall. Even the last spring's race was really good with Harvick, Elliott, and I think it was Kyle, ironically enough, having a really good race at the end. You know, it's going to be last year's package for the most part. So what do you think we'll see, and who you got going to victory lane in the Xfinity and Cup Series?
Well, I remember that we almost had a deal where Kyle thought about throwing that race. Because the way things were working out, if he moved over and let, I think it was Almirola win, Almirola would have advanced, and it would have kept, I think, Harvick out.
Yep.
And that, to this day, I honestly would have loved to have seen that. Because you'd have had people's heads absolutely explode off their shoulders if he had pulled over to let another racer win to keep a competitor that he felt had a better chance at championship from advancing. That would have been something. I like that we're going back to full power. I think that we'll see some different racing, although it's still Phoenix. I'll piss off half of the world right now and say Phoenix is a short track. I was getting into that argument with all my short track buddies because I believe a mile and under is a short track. Most guys say under a mile is a short track, but I like the way Phoenix races. I think the new configuration is cool. I would like to see them do away with that dogleg garbage on the back where everybody goes driving through the infield. I think they should paint that whole area, and then if you want to run through there, fine, because
you ain't going
to be able to get any grip. Yeah. it's stupid to me that they do that, and then you go to the Roval, and guys cut through a corner and they get penalized. And there shouldn't be a difference from one to the other. So I'd like to see him get rid of that. But I've always enjoyed Phoenix. I like that it's kind of a crossover track from open wheel to stock cars. It's always been one of those places where you have big midget races, big sprint car races, and Indy car races, and Cup races, all at that one facility. It's always been just a neat destination to get out to the desert in the wintertime and go running. So I'm looking forward to the races. I'm curious to see who does what with the old package. In Xfinity, again, we can't pick Kyle because that's just a cheap way out.
Yeah, cheater.
It's hard to pick against Christopher Bell in Xfinity, honestly. That dude is so strong. And again, Phoenix is one of those tracks that dirt track racers seem to excel at. So I'm going to go with Bell for Xfinity. On the Cup side, I think we shouldn't be allowed to pick Harvick because the same thing. It's Harvick, and it's like Harvick and Phoenix and Johnson and Dover are the two things you should never be allowed to pick because it's just a layup. I'm not going to steal your Kurt Busch pick because you were bragging on him earlier because that'd be mean of me to do that. Let's just go totally bananas and say Alex Bowman shocks the world.
Hey, he's ran well there in the past.
We've seen him run there well there in the past. We're back to the no tapered spacer. Let's go with Bowman with Kyle Larson chasing him to the line.
Interesting. That would be quite the finish if Bowman were to pull it off. 2016 should have won the race, the fall race, subbing for Dale Jr. So, as far as Xfinity, you're right. Bell is almost an easy pick now. With Kyle, you know. So, I'm gonna go Allgaier though. He had a disappointing weekend in Atlanta. Ran pretty well, or not Atlanta, Vegas. Ran pretty well, but blew an engine. Runs really well at Phoenix. Dominated this race 2 years ago. Going into last fall's race, he had like a string of like five top fives in a row or something at that track. And obviously, I think he's going to get redemption from the fall race where his brakes, you know, he needed pretty much to win the race and his brakes, you know, were on fire. So he couldn't win. So I think he'll get redemption, win this weekend, lock himself in the playoffs. Not that that'll be an issue. As far as Cup, Kurt's a good pick. Harvick is probably going to win. But I'm gonna go Bowman's teammate, Chase Elliott. He runs well there. This probably should have been his first win in the fall of 2017 when him and Kenseth were kind of battling it out at the end. Yep. So I'll go Chase Elliott. Like I said, always runs well at Phoenix. And Hendrick needs something to go right. They haven't had a good start to the year at all. In 12 total starts, they have two top tens. So, hey, maybe Bowman or Elliott will get the win. We're going on a limb here. Now, Neff, we're doing something a little different this weekend, or this week on the podcast. We're going to do the interview after we discuss the weekend's events. So let's go to my interview with Eric Almirola. All right, Eric, I feel like we have a lot to talk about. You started 25th at Las Vegas this past weekend and finished 7th. Take us through your weekend as a whole.
Yeah, I thought last weekend was a great weekend for us. Obviously, qualifying kind of caught us by surprise with the new drafting style of qualifying. I thought we had a really good car we were plenty capable of qualifying inside the top 10. And in the first round of qualifying, I didn't go out and draft. I kind of went to go run by myself. And we were 16th, which we thought was plenty good. I just have to make the top 24. And then a big pack of cars went out stressed. It was like less than 2 minutes to go in qualifying round one. And 9 cars beat us within the last minute of the round because they were drafting. And we ended up 25th. So that kind of caused by surprise. But overall, the weekend was great. We had a great car. We were able to drive up through the field and run well inside the top 10 and in the top 5 most of the day.
Yeah, you mentioned the qualifying session. That's something we really haven't seen before, the drafting. What were your thoughts on that? Because it seemed like a lot of drivers were kind of down on it.
Yeah, you know, I think the unfortunate part of what qualifying has become with that package is that it's very situational. The first car out on the racetrack is at a major deficit. It's the last car out on the racetrack. And you saw that in the final round of qualifying where guys were trying to jockey for position and nobody wanted to be the first one to go out on the racetrack because they're at such a major deficit. And pretty much if you're the first car out on the track, you can kind of guarantee that you're going to be 12th, in that final round of qualifying. So I think that's what everybody's, most upset with and doesn't like, just the fact that, know, the lap time and how you go about, getting your starting position is so random and situational, and it's not really about the fastest car on the racetrack.
I know NASCAR announced that, you know, group qualifying is going to be intact the whole year, like a month ago or so, but is that something you feel like maybe they should look into now that we've had a race under its belt?
You know, I think they'll continue to look at that and evolve that. I think when, you know, we're racing on pit road and you know, creating some sort of danger element, the other side of pit wall and the fact that we're going so fast on a jockey for position, I think that they'll have to be sitting on pit road for the length of time that we are, and everybody's kind of playing cat and mouse game. We're trying to jockey for position. I think NASCAR will look into that. I think for right now, they'll want to get a few races under their belt to kind of evaluate from track to track how it's going to play out. But I believe that they'll have to step in at some point and make some changes.
Understandable. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the aero with the new aero package. The full debut came into effect this past weekend at Vegas. Overall, did you enjoy the package, or what kind of tweaks do you think it may need?
You know, I think it produced some pretty intense racing, especially on the restarts.
Right.
Restarts were wild. We were 4 and 5 wide, and it certainly has an entertainment value. So I appreciate that. At the end of the day, we're racers and we're competitors, and whatever the rules are, from my standpoint, I want to be competitive, regardless of the rules and the package and all those things. And if we are and we can make our car fast and competitive, then I don't really care what the rules are. It's our job as a team to adapt and figure out how to make the most of what you have to work with. So from that standpoint, I think we've been doing a good job. You know, we ran inside. We led a bunch of laps at Atlanta and ran inside the top five. And then I got a penalty and kind of put us behind, and we were able to rally back to the top 10. And then this weekend at Vegas, I kind of got us behind in qualifying by, getting 44 and really kind of just fighting all day to get up towards the front. And then once we were able to get up there, we were fourth, eighth place car. So we've been doing a good job, but we certainly have work to do to make our race cars better and continue to evolve and get better to where we can compete to win these races.
Yeah, and obviously the race was fairly clean, having really no cautions outside the stage breaks. But with that said, I mean, I was surprised about that. Were you, with how clean it was?
I was. I thought that the best cautions was going to be after a caution, because I knew the restarts were going to be wild. And there's just going to be swarms of cars and everybody kind of fighting for position and 4 and 5 wide. So I did assume that there would be some cautions and crashes, but once the field kind of sorts out and gets too wide or single file, I thought that was going to be pretty much no chance at that point to have cautions, just because the cars make so much downforce, and they are, even though they don't handle that great after you run 15, 20 laps, the cars still make so much downforce, and obviously we're the best stock car drivers in the world. There's 40 guys out there that are really talented race car drivers, and so they're not going to spin out all wrecked because the cars are just not that out of control with that much downforce on the car.
Yeah, with
and it's hard and it's hard to get close to each other. Once the cars get kind of strung out, because they do make so much downforce, they punch an even bigger hole in the air than they used to years ago.
I know you mentioned the restarts, but is it different from the driver's seat now than before?
I think it's always been, the restarts have always been, crazy the last several years, but I positioned through the quarter, so you guys, you know, really fighting on the research to establish success. But this is for Trent now, you know, as much as has it become really intense, because the cars drive so stuck to the racetrack on new tires with all the downforce that we have now, that guys are very confident and comfortable being aggressive and putting their cars in positions that you wouldn't have put yourself in with, you know, way less downforce on them.
Got it.
And more aggressive on the restarts because we're going slower, and we have you know, more control of our cars because of the downforce. So in front of you, it's pretty wide, and you can maybe make a pass, and you can make it full pop. It works. Pass three cars in one corner. Once the cars get strung out, you're not going to pass three cars in three laps, much less one corner. So that's just a very opportunistic time to gain as much track position as possible. But it also comes at the risk of losing a lot of track position in a short amount of
time. Right. Now, we're heading to Phoenix this weekend. In the fall, you had a top five run there, three straight top tens at the track. How do you feel about the weekend as a whole going into it?
Yeah, I feel really good about Phoenix. You know, like you said, we've had three top tens, or I've had three top tens in a row going into this weekend. We've had really good races there last year. And I think this is the first race this year that we're going to really be able to lean on some of our past notes. You know, I know we've got more downforce in the car this year at Phoenix, but we've got a similar to what we've had in the past. And you know, it's still a short track. It's still, Phoenix is a 1 mile short track where there's going to be, you know, a lot of off throttle time, and we're going to be driving the car. And so I think some of our past notes and things are going to apply.
Well, you know, like I said, you almost got the win there in the fall. You got three straight top tens. Why do you think Phoenix fit your driving style?
You know, I don't really know. I don't think there's any one thing. I've had some success there. When you have success at a place, just kind of show up there more confident, knowing what you need out of the race car. That confidence and that success just kind of breeds more success and more confidence that kind of snowballs. You know, that's just been a place over the last few years that I've really run well at and had good success. And then on top of that, I think Harvick to lean on. He's obviously had a trip to Phoenix. So to have, you know, to lean on and look at his driver data and look at the setups and stuff that they use there and kind of be similar on setups and kind of learn from them as a group on the four team was helpful for us as well. And then now we just kind of have a history and a notebook to go off of that has had success. So we just kind of keep building on that. That's that. And the previous success certainly gives us a lot of confidence going to Phoenix.
Well, cool, man. Thanks for joining the show. And good luck this weekend in Phoenix.
Yeah. All right, Dustin. I appreciate your time.
All right, everybody. So you can tell that we had some audio issues with the interview, as I had to record it from a different location than I typically would record an interview. We typically do these interviews via Skype and have the driver call in, such as the case here. Unfortunately, I can't control Wi-Fi at certain places, making for a bad connection in this case. But I still learned a lot from Eric. I wouldn't be surprised if he wound up in Victory Lane this weekend in Phoenix. And regardless if he does or doesn't, we'll be back next week to break down the action. Until then, we out.